66. It's the 20-somethingth of November.
The 25th of February.
The 25th of February.
We practiced this before it started and you still got it wrong. I can't believe it.
And this before it started.
Yes.
Gertrude did.
Keep going.
And we're here today with Juliet Ward.
Yes.
Otherwise known as Jet.
Jet.
And
sometimes
also Steve.
I don't play, though.
Who doesn't play?
Right.
John Boy, who doesn't play?
No.
Gertrude sings on occasion.
No instruments.
Jim Boots.
Who plays?
Does nothing but play. And my good self, Candy A.
Or Candy rhymed. Pants, as you were just dubbed moments ago.
That's going to be struck from the record, like many other aliases before it.
So, yes, we have in the room Juliet Ward, Jet, with a long history of playing in bands in Canberra and Sydney. Tell us a little bit of the history.
Well, like a lot of people my age, which was pretty young, I ran away from Canberra as a teenager and went to Sydney.
It wasn't the exciting place that it now is.
Vibrant, exciting.
Yeah.
No. I actually don't know how exciting it is now.
Well, you're in an even more exciting place, which is Queanbeyan.
That's true.
We
it's
hear
pretty
the
lively there
screaming.
On a Saturday night. Greg Appel at the time was in a band called the Grant Brothers. And that I think they played for one gig. And he was writing songs for a band called Guthaka Pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
And the songs that Guthaka Pipeline did that I really liked were often his. And some of them were written by The Who. I don't know. You don't remember Guthaka Pipeline?
I've heard
great
of the name.
Punk band.
No.
So, Grant Brothers, Guthaka Pipeline. There was a certain G theme going on at this period of Canberra musical history.
I think there may have been. Yes.
Okay. What are we getting years on this?
It was around about when John Lennon died, which I think is not
early
80s. 81. Yeah.
I was in second form.
So we moved up to Sydney and lived in group houses for a while, and then formed a really stupid country and western cover band.
Right. Where you were ahead of your time.
Because we just played in the lounge room
mm-hmm.
all the time for fun. Mm-hmm. And then there was a talent quest and we won it, which must mean the rest of the bands were pretty shit, I think. But that swelled our heads a little bit, so we went down to the local pub and demanded a residency there. Where we performed with rakes and broomsticks as microphone stands.
Mm.
We had a dog in the band.
Mm.
What did the dog play?
He barked.
Okay.
He was on the bark.
Lead barking, wasn't he?
My bark. But he was a golden retriever and it was really pretty.
So you could give him the little hand symbol and
what a great gimmick. Why don't more people do that?
He just held a microphone in front of his mouth.
And he'd bark.
He'd bark.
As needed. That's a good dog.
Yeah.
And that was sort of our beginning.
The crowds didn't freak him out?
No, he loved crowds.
One of those bloody retrievers.
Yeah.
And did that band become the Lighthouse Keepers?
Eventually.
Right.
And the dog had a solo project? Or
that was going to become Bouncer or Neighbours?
No, you can actually hear the dog on some old Lighthouse Keepers records. He still had a part to play, just on occasional songs, not all of the songs.
And so you were there at in the thick of the Sydney pub rock scene in the 80s, which was the heyday.
It was great.
There were so many pubs that had that sort of residency thing where you played every week, so you could get like a gig here on Tuesday, there on Wednesday, there on Thursday.
Or the same place, you know, every Thursday we played at Strawberry Hills for 2 months. Yeah. And that meant somebody would come and see you, they'd tell their friends, they'd come and see the next week.
Yes.
And also it meant that the band got tight really quickly. Although part of our shtick was not to be very tight. We did get tight despite ourselves.
Mm.
So the thing with the Lighthouse Keepers was it's sort of, although we weren't punk by any means, we had a lot of the punk ethos, which was to not particularly be smashing musicians or not to do anything that was, that you had to be enormously skilled.
You weren't
to
playing
do.
Arpeggios or anything like
no.
that?
No.
Arpeggios? No. There's a pregnant arpeggio.
Arpeggio.
You'll see it now.
Arpeggios.
I think we were playing arpeggios.
So run through some of the haunts of the era. And
Sandow.
Yes.
And how
well,
Sandowtown
was a bit later, actually. It was more inner city stuff. When the pub that I said that we went and demanded a residency at was the Britannia in Cleveland Street, and the Wet Taxis used to come and watch us, and the Celibate Rifles used to come and watch us, and I was actually a bit scared of those guys, but...
Was Damien Lovelock as much as of a knob then as he is now as a sports commentator?
He didn't come as much as the other
The
guys
others,
did.
Right.
I think he's good.
Yeah, you like him as a
Watch yourself,
yeah.
boy.
Anyway...
But, no, Kent used to come, and he was always very nice. And Lewis used to come, and he was not always so nice. He used to laugh at me, but he did come.
What was he laughing at?
Mrs. Lewis Tillett?
Yes. I think he just found us hilarious for some reason.
Lewis Tillett? Did you just say, was that in the context of the Celibate Rifle?
No, in the context of the Wet Taxis?
The Wet
in
Taxis.
In the context of the Wet Taxis.
Yeah.
And this was when we had the dog... And the dog running around the broomsticks and knocking over the mic stands and stuff like that. So it was pretty funny.
Yeah. So the dog wasn't, like, tied up or anything? He was just wandering around? And...
No, yeah.
Okay.
And you could take dogs into pubs. You can't do that now.
Mm. Except for pubs with beer gardens, like Tilly's or Orbanan, you can take your dog to.
Neither now can you smoke. And I did just want to bring that up. We're very happy, all those of us that smoke... Actually, we're a dwindling breed, and there's only two of us. Yeah. But it's good to have a person in who smokes, because we're sitting here going nuts otherwise. Do you know what I mean? Because we can't smoke in the pod.
I don't know what you're talking
about. I'm going to shut up. I think we should play.
Are you telling me to not smoke?
No, I'm saying it's
he's
great.
He's thanking you for smoking.
I just smoke.
Okay,
then
I'm
we
sorry
just
to
smoke.
Your microphone. It can't be very good for the microphone.
He's sick of these clean-cut children turning up demanding he stub out his cigarette.
Yeah.
Oh, mate, have a little cough.
But the Sydney Trade Union Club.
Yeah.
Strawberry Hills Graphic Arts Club. Fantastic venues and enormous venues as well. You could put on, they did put on, you know, lots of bands on a weekend night.
What changed?
Well, the first thing I think that happened was the fire regulations,
right,
which meant
four
people
ladies.
Had to do some infrastructure stuff, which meant it became expensive for them to do it, and then pokies. In the 80s, it was just brilliant. You could live on the dole. So you could easily be a band in a band and live. It wasn't a fantastic,
but it was
know.
Fun, I imagine.
But it was fun, yeah. Mm. And you know, you could buy decent clothes from a second-hand shop. So it was fairly all right existence.
Given that the fashion of the day tended to the dredged out of the dumpster look anyway.
Yeah.
That's
exactly
the fashion
right.
shops
you
on the
wear
high
those
road
tights?
With Salvation
they don't have any
Army.
Rolls in
yeah.
It.
and. The pubs actually wanted bands, so they were actually paying you rather than the other way around now.
It's been $300 has been the going rate for a band for how many years now?
Since that time, since the early 80s.
And $300 would buy an awful lot more in 81 than it will now.
I spoke to an old roadie last night who reckons that Sydney basically went over that this period, went from sort of having sort of 350 places that had band, live music of some sort to about a tenth of that. You know, today.
You think there'd be 30 venues in Sydney playing original live music?
They're still disappearing.
Sure there'd be a few.
And Warren View's not doing it anymore, and that is about the only one I knew. Still
like the, I mean, the Sandow went and the Annandale went, they're the two main ones that I. But they've come back
the
in
Phoenician
the last
Club.
4 or 5 years. They've put music back on there.
Phoenician
Club's gone.
That went like.
Well, shall we have some music to buck the trend?
From the era, a song from the Lighthouse Keepers?
All right.
Perhaps.
Alright.
Do you want to play a song?
Alright. I'll have to do Gargoyle, really, don't I?
Watching her for some time. They come in close, but she says she doesn't really mind. The secret plan is underhand. He takes his aim. He takes her hand and says to her, "What can I say?" And he says, "No. Can't go wrong. It just can't go wrong. 'Cause you don't know what I've been going through for you." And hear the music's getting louder. And suddenly it all comes true. And I can do anything. Back room. And step by step, he takes her down and down the stairs. Is this heaven or hell? 'Cause I can't tell, but I don't seem to care. And he says, "No, it can't go wrong. It just can't go wrong, 'cause you don't know what I've been going through for you." And hear the music's getting louder. And suddenly my dream comes true. And I can do anything I'm not allowed to. Back
was Gargoyle by Jet and...
Well, it was by the Lighthouse Keepers.
By the Lighthouse Keepers. Performed by Jet.
Performed by me, yes.
Okay, got that cleared up. But you're not playing much anymore.
No.
Because I already asked you on mic, and I guess you're not playing anymore because there's no one to make you.
Yeah. What I was saying was I'm actually fairly ambivalent about playing, which I think a lot of performers aren't.
Yeah.
You need to really believe in yourself to do what you do, and if you don't, you suffer.
Yeah.
And I'm one of those people who suffers. So if somebody's pushing me and it makes me go, I can complain the whole time, but I'll still go.
Mm.
And the last person who was doing that a lot, actually, I said it was my brother, but I played a lot with my brother and it was the best, I think. And after he died, I played with a friend of his and a friend of mine, Benjo, for a while.
Yeah, okay.
But Benjo's as bad as me. He will bottle out really quickly.
Yeah, okay.
We're not very, actually very good for each other. We're really good when we're both supporting each other, but when we're both feeling insecure, then... We're under our own beds and not actually helping each other.
Yeah.
For the benefit of those that don't know, your brother...
Batters.
Is Batters.
Yes, Barnaby Wood.
Who passed away...
2002.
I was thinking 6 years now, I was close.
Okay.
And he played in The Bedridden.
Mm-hmm.
and had a solo career.
Fantastic solo career. And he was very good for me because he played because he liked playing, which actually was a bit of news to me. You know, that
some people actually get off
that,
on it.
That actually, you know, I mean, I knew that there was a reason why I was doing it, and I do enjoy actually being on stage and singing, but there's a lot of other stuff that I didn't enjoy very much, and if somebody said boo to me after I'd been singing, I'd collapse into a pile of jelly, and it just was not worth it.
Would you say he sought out the limelight, though?
He
sought out the limelight was... That was something he picked,
Barnaby
right?
did that he... Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, he loves it.
Mm.
And absolutely adores entertaining people. And...
Because I never met him. I've only known him through his music. But I,
right.
There's quite a lot of his personality in his music.
Yeah. But if you go to, if you went to one of his gigs, he would play his own songs until people got really pissed and weren't listening anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then he wouldn't waste his good songwriting on them, and he'd start playing Kylie Minogue and other disco, and he did a Spice Girls song for a while and stuff like that, and he did them, it was hilarious, because he didn't want to stop playing, and he just loved people enjoying it. When I was playing with him, I went down to Adelaide for a while and I was playing with him and doing my own songs, and he would support me. He's a much better guitarist than me, which means I can relax and actually sing rather than worrying about whether I'm hitting the right chord or not. And his whole personality was good as well, and helped me start having a good time. And so. And, and my problem too is that I'm attracted to really depressing songs as well. So.
Isn't everyone?
Yeah.
It took me a while to realise, but almost everybody dies before the end of most of the songs I sing.
Yeah, okay.
So Waltz and Matilda?
Something like that, yeah. But I blame my parents. We both, Barnaby and I, grew up listening to my parents singing around the table and singing folk. I don't want to say folk because that sounds... I mean, to me, that's a bit of a swear word.
But, diddly diddly dee.
Yeah, no, they sang old standards and blues stuff, and, but most of them, everybody died before the end of the song. And where I went on the melancholy route, Barnaby went on the sort of that's really funny route and got the twist out of it.
Mm.
Yeah, because a lot of his funniest work really does have quite a dark...
Yeah, a lot of people die in his songs. It,
yeah.
My mother's turned into a spider.
Yeah.
Zombie girl, yes.
Yes. That is a true story.
So did you live down in Adelaide for a while, and what sort of a scene did they have at the time?
Adelaide's fantastic for music. It's, well...
We can cut this out, but Adelaide being fantastic, yeah.
I haven't...
Adelaide, it's okay.
When was the last time I was down there? March last year. It was still pretty good.
It must be March, yeah.
And I think there are publicans there who like music, and, you know, there's a real good indie scene. There's a good independent radio station.
A lot more restrictions on poker machines, though.
Maybe there is, yeah. When I went down there, played at the Producers Hotel, the publican used to get up and sing songs with you.
Was he any good?
That could be bad, yeah.
But, you know, it was a casual... It was nice. It was very nice.
That was the intuitive thing.
And there was a lot of... I mean, Barnaby was there, Sal Saw Bob, a guy called Guillaume, who do the solo guitarists, do humorous songs. But there's also a lot of bands who play lots of really loud guitar with their legs spread really widely and their hair hanging down in front of their heads and stuff. And they're all great as well.
Yeah, go on. So
it's a good scene.
Yes.
Should we go to a song?
Yes, we should. Can we... Have another song?
An Adelaide song. Or a Batters song. How about a Batters song?
Yeah, a Batters song.
All right, this is a Batters song called Morning After.
a packet on the ground. You gotta be more careful with me, 'cause you know what I might pass around. Did you trust that guy? Did you ask him if he had been tested? Or did you just not feel like being protected that day? Seen your friends die off, but soon it's going to start. One day I'll come and see you, and you can watch me fall apart. It's a shame these days that sex and death are so intimately connected, and it's a shame that you don't feel like being protected that way.
Should have actually pointed out that that wasn't one of Barnaby's funny songs.
That's okay. Got a break there?
No, we might as well just continue.
Okay, I've got a few things I want to ask you about that song. Barnaby died of complications from AIDS, is that correct?
That's true, yes.
So he was writing that song with an awful lot of personal perspective, yes, on the AIDS epidemic.
Yes.
Now, he got it as a haemophiliac from the blood supply, is that also correct?
That's true.
Okay. Did he have relationships after he was diagnosed?
Yes.
How did that all work?
Well,
I'm
wondering how much of that song do you know was related to his own experience, or?
What I can tell you is what he told me,
yeah,
was that he, amongst his personal friends, there were a lot of people not practicing safe sex.
Yeah.
And he was pretty angry about that,
mm-hmm,
because he said, one of them is going to get AIDS one day and they're going to blame me.
Right.
Mm.
And it's not going to be him.
Yeah.
But because they're all being blasé, he's not.
Mm.
You know.
Mm. Okay.
But I think, you know, there's things you can do. You can have sex without...
Yes. He had a good
transmitting
imagination. It's fairly
diseases,
obvious from his song, so he had a good imagination.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's for the other... I was just listening to it thinking, he's saying things that if he just wrote down as a statement would have people absolutely screaming at him. But if you write them in a song and have a smile on your face as you perform it...
He didn't have a smile on his face. He was actually quite scared performing it live.
Mm. Yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
So he was worried...
Well, not scared that somebody was going to attack him.
Mm.
It's more scared because it was extremely personal.
So. Yeah.
Mm.
I can't believe how personal that is. It's and it shows... I mean, there's even the lyrical qualities just shines... such brilliance, and it stands out as such a difference to his all, you know, the vast majority of his work, which is so playful.
Yeah.
And there's still an element of playful in it, which just carries such different, I don't know, feelings and experience with it. And I think people that don't know anything about having a condition probably learn a lot just from listening to that and thinking about it in a way they could read 10 books about.
I think it's an important song because of what it says. But I also think it's an important song because he was worried about it. He was worried that it was very personal. And I know that, as a songwriter, you do think, am I going to sound like, a wanker, basically. Self-indulgent wanker. And the thing I think that proves that he's a good songwriter is that that song doesn't sound like a self-indulgent wanker, even though it could so easily be.
It's quite clever putting it in a different voice to himself, in that, well, it's talking. To me, it sounds like the inner voice of the woman that it's about as much as anything. I don't know, that's just the way I...
Well, I think he says I and you.
Yeah.
So he's not
impersonalising
the song at all.
Mm. Okay, alright, I apologise.
Wrong again, Tomboy. How do you feel?
No, I think that we've gone to Sydney, we've gone to the Lighthouse Keepers, we've been to Adelaide, we've seen...
we've missed a few years.
About Batter. Yeah, so maybe you want to either fill in some guts before or after. There's bands called the Widdershins.
Mm-hmm.
Is the Fish John West Reject connected there as well?
No.
Wrong. But why did the...
Wasn't it the Fish Ken West Reject anyway?
Yeah.
No, the band.
John West. The band John West. The Fish. The band John West Reject.
Oh, okay,
I forget.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's the band. Sorry, I'm thinking of the alternative to the Big Day at Music Festival with Ken West.
There's a band.
I thought that was a good joke.
Where's
my cigarette?
I don't know. Crisis, oh no!
Under the guitar.
Yeah, thank goodness.
Nicely pressed by a mate.
Yes.
Why did the Lighthouse Keepers become the Widdershins? Because it was still some of the same personnel, wasn't it? Greg was still in it.
We broke up and reformed, just me and Greg, really.
Right, yeah.
We're the only...
Changing the name was to make the other band members feel better about being left behind.
No, it wasn't the Lighthouse Keepers
anymore.
Okay.
Greg played a 12-string guitar.
He did.
Yeah. I remember seeing you guys at the Lansdowne.
Yes.
In about 86,
yeah.
87.
Yeah.
And I was pretty impressed with his guitar playing.
Yes.
He was very quick.
And a good songwriter.
Mm.
Yes. So, Stephen... We had two Stevens. One was called Harry, who was originally in Guthrie Pipeline and the Grant Brothers. He's now in the Canaanes. So he went off after Lighthouse Keepers.
Hey, one of the Canaanes is living in Queanbeyan. I met her recently. Fair income. She's a friend of a friend of mine. I can't remember which friend it is.
You can't get a more intimate connection than that.
Well, maybe a friend.
You're meaning one of the Canaanes.
Yeah,
her surname is Canaane, in which case it would be Michelle.
Maybe. Can't remember.
And she lives in Potts Point. But she did visit me in Queanbeyan recently. Maybe
I'm sure she said she was living in Queanbeyan.
Oh.
Maybe that was a little joke. Maybe the folk in Potts Point think it's a laugh to tell people that they're in Queanbeyan.
They think of the worst possible place as far as you could get from Potts Point. And,
he's not casting nasturtiums on my hometown.
Yes.
That's actually kind of obligatory in the pod. Just about every other episode, someone has a go at Queanbeyan.
Sometimes we
want to
take it on. It was only that nasty Zoe who really had a go at Queanbeyan.
Mm.
James Nichols, for instance, defended the high-tech industries of Queanbeyan.
Yes.
So. Something he doesn't get a lot of kudos for.
Yeah. It's got more high-tech industry than Canberra does.
Yes, well...
So the
it's possible Canberra won't exist at all soon if prime ministers and visiting vice presidents don't even bother to come here.
Yeah, right.
I'm staying out of the property
that
market.
That
very
is
reason.
A very strange
and
thing.
And opposition leaders are talking about not moving here as well.
Mm, good stuff.
It's well, he owns a huge mansion in Queensland. He doesn't want to give that up.
In where? Queanbeyan?
Queensland. No, not Queanbeyan. Queanbeyan would be funny.
That'd be a coup for Queanbeyan.
Canberra sucks so much the Prime Minister's living over the border.
Cheaper rates. tell us, Dick Cheney, why is it strange?
It's 7 days he's out here.
It's a long time.
For a vice president to be out of what, especially a vice president like Cheney, who's very much in the loop. Some of them twiddle their thumbs, but he's not one of them.
So do you think it's time to hide?
He's here shoring up the alliance.
I don't think he's shoring up the alliance. I think he's attracting ferals to throw things at him because John Howard's vote rises as ferals throw more things at him or people like him on TV. Every time the protesters go out and throw eggs at John Howard.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, that can't be the reason he came here, to just sort of increase John Howard's vote a little bit.
I think it's because he's so hated in the US that they're trying to keep him off the telly for a week so that maybe someone... Maybe
and John, they can't be bothered covering Australia. Well, he's very good at hiding in America. I mean, I remember after 9/11, it was like a month before anyone ever saw him again because he was sitting in the bunker.
Probably shooting his mates on the weekend.
Shooting his mates.
That was the first we heard of him after that.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. It's odd to spend that much time in Australia. Now, he is apparently going fishing down in Tasmania, and he is an avid fly fisherman. He used to, before he became vice president, actually come to Adamininby, not that far from here in Canberra, and was a regular at the Outpost, I think it's called, one of the fly fishing lodges up there.
Stephen B. Yon. Fly fishing expert here.
Well, did you and Dick get it on?
Until he shot him in his face.
He went fishing with him and he got a fly on his cheek. He like ripped his cheek off.
Yeah. I know, it's a very odd visit. It was announced very oddly, the timing. There's an awful lot of strange things we're only seeing little bits of going on, and I think this is part of it.
Isn't it a bit like having Darth Vader come to visit or something? Mm. It's a bit
to
scary.
Inspect the
it's
construction almost. Of the Death Star.
What deals are they doing? I don't know.
I don't think they need to do deals in person anymore. I'd be surprised if they do deals.
I think he's just here to lean on Peter Garrett, one baldy to another.
Yeah.
No more songs about
it. He doesn't need to lean on Peter Garrett. Peter Garrett's standing up and saying, yes, US bases, let's have some more.
Just a couple more. And how about five more Blue Sky Mines as well?
Yeah. Well, that's next. Peter Garrett will get up and advocate in this expansion of the asbestos industry. But...
enough about Australian politics and
Uranium
politics. Back to some music.
Well, no, to really important
the downfall
things.
Of 80s rockers. I think
what they grow up in their series. Buy nice suits. I admire Gary's wearing some great suits at the moment.
Listen, to more important things than Dick Cheney's visit. Some people here went to the Canberra show.
The Royal Canberra show. Let's not
the
Royal
Canberra show. How was it, folks?
It was... I always find the show... I mean, there's so, everything is there. And I went with Tom.
Everything. They've got everything.
Dick Cheney. He was there.
They've got Showman.
They've
got
clowns.
It's astonishing how... Well, Hayley Jensen was there last night. And
they have fireworks every night.
They have fireworks.
Forever.
Everything isn't there. There's a lack of singer-songwriters, certainly.
Sadly.
Although that can be easily remedied. I saw pig racing.
With people on the pigs.
No, the pigs are... It's really cute. They say, these pigs are all so carefully trained, and this is Australia's only professional pig trainer here to supervise their racing. And the voice of pig racing in Australia came out and...
He's something. Yeah.
And in his snakeskin boots. And, and Charlene in her leather trousers came out to wrangle the pigs.
She was the lure, the rabbit.
I'm not...
Send her out on
it. I'm not sure how Charlene, a reasonably young woman, looked a little bookish, but I'm not sure how you end up on the pig racing circuit in your leather trousers, but all they do is they've got the pigs.
Are they made out of pigskin?
How dare you!
They didn't look like they were pigskin leather, but I could be wrong. I'm not that good at leather. I would have needed to
touch. Pig doesn't make good leather.
There's some nice leather jackets made of pig.
I think you are forgetting the main attraction in the pig racing tent or pig racing arena, and that was the pig diving.
The diving pig.
The diving pig who runs to the top of this ramp
and falls off.
No, it leaps.
It falls off.
It doesn't fall. It leaps.
They were leaning forwards over the edge, trying to get like someone,
You're probably watching. The amateur entrance.
The kid on the 10-meter dive board, sort of hanging on by their fingertips, not quite wanting to let go.
And then
perhaps you saw a second-rate pig diver.
Maybe. But I love with the race. They got these pigs terrified. They got the crowd shouting, and the pig race is basically the pigs sort of go around a bit of a U-turn, but they go from some place they don't want to be to the safety of their enclosure away from the crowds. And holy shit! With all this training, the pigs will run from the place they don't want to be to safety. And along the way, they go past the little checkered flag run. I mean, it was incredibly piss weak, and they make no money. It wasn't that amusing. The show puts it on because the camera time.
Well, you've been talking about it for 15 minutes.
Exactly.
I mean, that's amusing.
Local media goes out and writes about the singing pigs at...
singing pigs.
No, they don't sing, but I'm,
singing, diving, running,
dancing.
Racing.
Yeah, and then there's Hayley Jensen on the main
stage. Triathlon pigs.
And they should sell those pigskin jackets outside, on the
for
way
the
out.
Losing pigs. Yeah.
Yeah, the losing pigs. Yeah,
from last year.
Yeah. Anything else on the show? See any Paris lookalikes?
Well, funnily, you should ask. yeah, I mean, there is, especially down the Kearney territory, all the young girls trying to be Paris Hilton. And I said,
did you see any gash?
No, they weren't getting in and out of their limos, so...
I can oversee you. Gash, you mean Girls Against Sexist, high, well-known, hardcore, femino punks of 1982?
Exactly.
No, Melbourne? No?
What was I suddenly realised I'm old. Right. I'm really old because I can remember being there when I was 18 and this is all women I want to meet and walking around and thinking,
oh my God.
Have no interest in these children whatsoever. Mm. And it's like, oh,
that's very reassuring.
You're in your
30s. I'm old now.
You're too old to desire 12-year-olds. Yeah. Well, that's nice to know.
Hey, most of them were like 17 by that time. But anyway.
It's a good thing to know that the podcast is now getting loud enough. We were very quiet before.
Okay, it's been a bit of a blur now. The beer's kicking in. Yeah. And I did see, going up the main concourse, about seven of these, this was getting into the evening, Paris Hilton wannabes, and one of them screamed, "Oh my God, I smell animals!" It's because they were getting closer to the main part of the show where the animals are, and they all turned on their heels and stomped back down in their silly shoes.
I had a friend, here's my show report, I didn't actually go, but a friend of mine, well, not really a friend, an acquaintance, put a thing in the Canberra Show art show, art competition
that
show.
That was really poor, actually. And, I'm not saying his piece was, I'm just saying...
No, hers is really bad, I mean, she's... Yeah.
It came second.
It came second, it was
which is
beaten.
Indicative of the quality, which was poor.
It was beaten by a pine cone, a painted pine cone with some feathers stuck into it. So
could have won a
we were looking at the art show and
all the other prizes.
Yeah, we were looking at the art show and the show, and normally, you know, it's like appreciate, okay, I'm not quite sure what they're trying to say, it's because I'm stupid. We looked at each other and we said, this is really low grade shit.
Do they have any of those things? I think they maybe only do them at the Easter, the Royal Show in Sydney.
The Easter Show.
Easter Show, but those huge tableaus made out of fruit and vegetables
they
and
have
stuff.
Yes, yeah,
well, and it says the banana is back.
Okay, if
on
Rydak this evening, we'll have our little slideshow of the pictures we took, including the fruit montage. So you just, yeah.
That's one of the best things in the show, I reckon. It's done well.
Yeah, but it was like sponsored by Woolworths, so we've screwed all the agricultural producers who are here and for all year, and now we're throwing their produce to rot in a display. I thought it was touching.
Yes.
And,
poignant.
We know what we're losing our guests' interest.
Speaking of poignant.
You can wake up and sing us a song.
I think we should go back to another song, Juliet. Could we have something from the Widdershins period?
We had
sure.
We ended on a poignant note there with the rotting Woolworths display.
Yeah, right.
And maybe
and
there's
the,
some sort of poignant note
the,
that the Widdershins
did. The lemming
did.
Pigs.
Mm.
Yes, and the leaping pigs.
Well, you know.
Leaping, racing.
We have to appeal to all tastes.
That's right.
Mm.
I couldn't think of anything more ghastly than going to the show.
No, I wouldn't go.
I think
like
I've been
the
there
animals?
Twice in my entire life.
I drove miles out of my way just so I wouldn't go past it.
And you ended up in the roadworks on Majura Road,
yeah.
Did you?
Yeah. It wasn't great.
You could have come and visited me in Queanbeyan.
I could have. I was on the way.
Queanbeyan show I'd go to.
I like a country show, I've got to say.
Yeah.
And you were talking about the fruit and veg display. I've still got in my treasured possessions my photos of the Gunning Show in 1997 or something. They've had a fantastic... Oh, no, it wasn't 97. It was the year before the Olympics. And they had their Olympics diorama at the Gunning Show. Geez, that was a highlight. It stands out. There was a couple of squash rackets, unmatching ones that you might find at any sort of op shop for maybe about 20 cents each. And there was a G.I. Joe wearing shorts, and there was a runner, and I think that was it. Yeah, it was fucking good.
Oh, my big news is the little...
And it had the Olympic rings. Yeah, all five of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Liberals store was interesting because A, it was huge, this is at the show, B, there was no one there, and C, of the coming election where there are four seats in the ACT, which Gary Humphries holds one, there were like two Gary Humphries posters, David Madieu, who's running in New South Wales for the Nationals, and Troy Williams, the candidate for Fraser. The whole thing was plastered with his posters. No mention of whoever's running for the seat of Canberra, which is the southern seat in the ACT. But so he seems to think he's in with a chance to actually unseat Bob McMullen, which would be an astonishing thing, given that the Liberals are going to be fighting for their lives in this election.
Mm.
But
well, you know,
they're not playing to lose there, which is unusual for them. Normally, they play to lose in the ACT, but. Yes, anyway.
That's far too deep a political analysis than
we'll
I
cut
that
out though, right?
Based on the show still. You bastard.
No, let's go to a song now. We're going to have a mystery song.
Sometimes it's hard to stay apart. Sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's good.
So that was Changeling, which was from the indeterminate mid Widdershins.
I'm not sure if it was Lighthouse Keepers or Widdershins, but it could have been both.
Somewhere around then.
Mm.
It was a fairly boppy selection.
Now, can I ask something? Is there any Patti Smith influence in your music, or do you both sort of happening at the same time?
PJ Harvey.
PJ Harvey.
PJ Harvey,
PJ Harvey must have listened to all your albums.
No.
She's been ripping you off.
Yeah, because I only heard of her, in the last 10 years.
Mm.
I think she's brilliant, but definitely not. Whereas Patti Smith, I did listen to Horses in 1980 or whatever. So I couldn't say no, except that I don't think she influenced Greg.
Okay.
And I don't think anybody influences my singing. I've tried trying to sound like other people and I can't.
Mm.
I think people who are really good singers can do that. They go, now I'm going to sing like...
Well, that's more your cabaret artist, isn't it? They're jumping around.
Yeah, very.
I think I could do it if I was doing covers. I mean, if I was doing a Doris Day song, perhaps maybe I could sound more
throw
like
on
her.
A kitsy little voice. <Yeah.
laughs> But no, not with an original song.
Okay.
Listen, this is just out of the blue, I know, but, you know, I've got this old Lighthouse Keepers album on tape, and there's a song on it called something like Singing About the Weather.
Yes.
Or something, and I don't want to set up the mic
Wheels
or do anything.
Wheels Across the Desert, I think it's called.
Could you just play a little bit and sing a little bit of it just for me, just now?
No.
Oh.
Sorry.
Why?
Because every band wants to be cool by rejecting the request, you know?
No, it's because I can't.
Oh, right, you can't remember
it? No, I couldn't remember it. I couldn't remember the chords or anything.
Yeah, right.
Sorry.
Anyway, I like that song.
The others were good too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what you needed to do before I came here. Mm. So what I really want to hear is this.
Yeah,
a couple of weeks ago.
You
do you know anything by Split Ends?
Yeah.
All right, moving along. Let's have another song.
Yay.
Oh.
I'd really like to hear Killing Time.
Okay.
Here it is.
Here we go.
All right, this is your Whittishan song. Killing Time. Yesterday I saw you look at me the way you looked at her and the way she looked at him. Now today I see your back again. You better watch your back again, 'cause I see someone looking this way. Is there nothing, really nothing else to do? Is this all that we've come to? Is this what you really want to do? I know what you say. What she said to, and I don't wanna hear it all again. It's killing time. You can't hurt me anymore. I've heard it all before. It's killing time anyway. Me back before, I know. You know there's no place else to go. This is where the people come to get away somewhere. This is where the people go. Try not to. I know what you said. I know what he said too. And it gives me such a thrill. It's killing time.
So that was Killing Time, and you've already said, Juliet, that you're not playing much anymore. What are you doing these days?
I have a day job. I'm working as a lab technician at John Curtin School of Medical Research.
Exciting.
Ooh. So, yes.
Try not to contract Ebola then.
I don't think that's likely. We're working on allergies.
Okay.
Lung inflammation specifically. Mm-hmm. So
right.
I suppose.
Do you need any
Ebola
volunteers?
Could affect your lungs and make them vomit out your mouth, but yeah. I don't think any of
that. They liquefy first.
Yeah,
make
yeah.
it easier.
Yeah. Yeah. You can still breathe through liquefied lungs. You made it tougher stuff than Ebola's going to do in.
And an allergy isn't going to be bothering
you
anymore.
That's probably true. Yes. My liquefied lungs are making it a bit difficult, but I've got this nasty skin condition that comes up every time I see a cat. Can you treat that?
Do you need any volunteers? Because, like, say someone who, 40-plus a day smoker...
Could be allergic to cigarettes, you
That's
think?
What I'm doing.
Oh, you're the volunteer.
I'm hoping that my boss fixes it so that I don't have to quit smoking. That would be great.
And then later you could sue them because they made it a condition of your work that you smoked.
No, he never did that. No, I'm sorry. He never did that. But I would like him to be successful. I think I have a vested interest there.
Yeah. Financial? I see. So that because you'll just be able to smoke forever and not get
my lungs
suffer,
are counting on him.
Yeah, right. I'm closely following that too.
So you're doing things to mice? Or what was
I'm
it?
Not.
No.
I'm a molecular biologist.
Okay.
Which means I deal with DNA, which is my way of sliding out of it. I've always worked with plants my entire career.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. Sits fine with me.
There isn't any plant liberation, are there?
No, I have no problem with destroying a lot of Arabidopsis,
right.
Which is the mouse of the plant world.
Right.
But I do have quite a lot of qualms about animal research, and I think that's good. People who do animal research should have qualms about doing animal research.
Because I had a friend who was actually doing a PhD at Oxford, and I met him because he was out here at the John Curtin School because he could experiment on the mice, because if they can't do that sort of work in England anymore without getting attacked by rabid mobs of people who don't like experimenting on mice.
Yeah, yes.
So, do you get many international refugees there, or they're in a different wing of the building to you?
We've got a lot of international people. I don't know if they're refugees because of Peter or something. I doubt it. I think they're here because they're good at what they do. But no, I think the British animal liberation people are particularly
well. Last year they
strong.
Last year they dug up the body of the mother of one of the guys who owned one of the labs and ransomed the dead body that they dug up until he stopped experimenting on animals, which seriously, which is
except
taking
no
protest to whole new levels previously.
Listen, I don't condone that, and I don't condone animal research, but I'd be pretty excited if something like that happened to John Curtin.
I condone both of those things, animal research and DNA.
You know where
bodies.
Your boss's mother is buried?
Actually, that's like something we could do.
I know where she lives.
You have to kill her first.
We want you to stop working and give us $100,000.
In fact, we've got our enterprise bargaining coming up. That's something to look into, where the boss is buried. Yeah. You can see
take
that as a handy chip.
Eat your heart out.
And look, on the subject of what you're doing, you're working at John Curtin, you're living in Queen Mary, and you're having a partnership with Steve here, which is why Steve is here.
Yes.
And, you've been very quiet, Steve.
That's right.
How long have you been together? It's not your fault.
No.
It's just always very quiet.
Right, well...
Well, Steve, do you hate the music of the 80s?
No.
Good answer.
Good answer. I love
it. Because it's a silly question, anyway. There's so much music from the 80s.
What I love is how what now gets played as 80s music and 80s revival. It was really obscure stuff at the time.
I disagree. I think it was the inordinate amount of pap that came out of the UK, which always seems to appear on 80s retro things, and I kind of don't like any of it. But I love all of the 80s stuff that I came across. And everyone goes, oh, the 80s are so dreary and dull. But
you were young then, mate.
When was the pap from the UK?
Duran was it, yeah. And actually, I have to do is review my sister's record collection.
Yeah.
And there's some horrible shite in there. Wah Wah Knee and...
They were Australian.
Thompson Twins.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. You know, don't bring it all flooding back, but yeah, there was all kinds of stuff going on which you just had to. In fact, I think really the only sane choice was to delve deep into the underground of society and
Bross, how can
and,
we Bross?
And music that wasn't on the radio. And
I think there was a lot of
otherwise
good
you
music.
Deserved everything you got.
I think there was a lot of good music that was buried beneath sort of all of this.
That's the same
the
as
synths
now.
And stuff. You know, like it could have.
I think even with the synths, there was some really interesting stuff going on. I mean, I think Frankie Going to Hollywood did.
Yeah, I guess they were kind of mainstream, but they were
really, really different, and they knew about Walkmans, for instance. They did this piece of music which is for listening in your head. That was
between
pretty
your ears,
special,
yeah.
And there was, and that was all electronic, wasn't it? It was pretty full-on stuff. There was a lot of crap, the way there is a lot of crap every generation.
Yeah, I guess it's true, and it's always seems
and
to be in the top
40. And that's why I said Thompson Twins, who seem to get played on radio still.
I think you'll remember
about flat, the music's crap.
The thing you got to remember about top 40 though is that it was something like 500,000 singles had to be sold in a week to make a number one single in the late 1960s, and these days it's like 20,000.
Yeah.
That's in the UK or the US sort of size markets.
Much more crap is coming out.
So there's hardly any records being sold to determine who's number one and who's number 40. It's not like everyone's going out and buying the new Beatles album and making it number one.
The 80s were magnificently diverse in that all kinds of, I guess, avenues got explored.
Do you think that's different to any different
quite
to
well, yeah, I do. I think there was a lot more. Oh, maybe it's just a bit more obvious because you could see, you know, they had a limited technology around. You could see, you know, the choice that some band had taken to try and be like whatever it is. Whereas now there's such a rich working medium that, you know, it's a bit harder to distinctify.
No, I think
that's a new word which I just painted in then, if you're listening.
I think you have to be careful of being your generation. I think all music from the 80s is better as well, but I think that's because of.
But your parents think all music from the 60s was better. So.
No, I don't think they do, actually.
Okay.
I don't think they think music from the 80s was better. But I think that stuff is going to float to the top, which is good. I think at the moment there is so much people can do. They can put their stuff straight onto the internet. They can form a band and produce records without any huge industry behind them.
The barriers to entry are
a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it means there's going to be a lot of
crap
out there. But I still think good stuff is going to be noticed. And I mean, not all of the good stuff will be noticed, which is why people like you guys need to keep listening,
plugging away,
and putting your ear to the ground. But there will always be good stuff that shines through, I think. Mm. And the 60s, early 60s, there was a lot of crap. But there's some nice music as well that's still, you know, you want to hear now.
All right, well, look, I being from, I can't exactly claim to be a generation younger than yourself, but being a few years younger than yourself, I had encountered your voice on, I guess, records that people older than me had, and I hold your voice in, I guess, a place that to me defines some part of the, you know, what was interesting and good about. Particularly Australian music in the 80s, and it was a pleasure to hear it again and meet you.
Thank you.
I thought you were about to propose.
I think it's true that there was that in Australia. It's definitely true that there was a lot more live music in the 80s, and I think that is sad. So you're right there. And thank you for your compliment.
And look, also, before we go, because we do have to go, but Juliet, come to my backyard back in Australia next week, and if you like it, can you play at the last one on March the 31st? Can I be one of those people who
makes
you do
all
it?
Right.
Yeah.
If even in a small way.
Yeah.
Sure. All right. Are we going to finish up?
I think we're done.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's been a great pleasure. Thanks
thank
for coming
you for coming in. Thank you to the audience for listening.
Once again. All the way to the end. Aren't they good?
They are good.
They listen to every minute.
Mm. Well, those minutes they haven't gone to the toilet.
Yeah.
We haven't had one of these for a while, but this is the, if you've made it this far, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, if you write to Insatiable Banalities at PO Box 4332 Hawker ACT 2614
Australia,
and if you're in Australia, in fact, and if you put that on a postcard and something,
we will read out whatever you put on.
We will
and
get
perform
that
any
eventually.
Challenges you might have.
We once talked in an American accent to perform a challenge.
It's incredible the things that we will do.
No humiliation.
We were naked though.
Will we do everything? Anything? Really?
Yeah.
No, we won't. We probably won't even collect the mail.
We could pretend to
do
anything.
Do that if
probably,
you want.
Yes.
If
no, we'll do it.
Oh
yeah.
No, we will do it.
I've got a feeling we're going to get a postcard. Soon, and it's going to say, we want you to do the podcast in the nude.
Yes, and we'll say, oh yes, we're all naked. Ooh, how's that breeze?
No, and I want you
now.
To take
What's
photographs.
You're going to send that postcard, you pervert.
No,
you've been trying
no.
to get my clothes off for years.
I would do that.
Oh, what are you talking about? You mean we got specially dressed for those photos for nothing?
I think we should send a postcard asking them to do it dressed.
Yeah.
This time. Thank you, dear listeners.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
It'll be much easier on the guests.
For the sake of the next guest.
Anyway, that's it. Goodbye, everyone. Thank
Goodbye.
You. You've been listening to Insatiable Banalities, podcast number 66, recorded on Sunday, the 25th of February, 2007.